from KQED.
Celebrated and award-winning choreographer Alonzo King joined us in studio in October. He has created contemporary ballet for over 50 international dance companies, worked in film, television, and opera, and in 1982 founded his own San Francisco-based dance troupe, Lines Contemporary Ballet. We began the interview talking about thought structures, which is the way he describes his work.
When you listen to music, what you're hearing is thought made audible. And when you're watching dance, you're witnessing thought made visible. And so what these are, they're structures of thought that people are imbibing. And that's what we present to each other. We communicate ideas. And a lot of people think it's just kind of whim and indulgence, when indeed these are thought structures.
The dancers, I use your word, imbibing, as well as, of course, the spectators.
That's
and,
right.
And the observers.
That's right.
And there's a sense that thought is working in this, but also in a deep way, because I watch you rehearse. I mean, I watch the group rehearse, and emotion plays maybe in some ways a more formidable role, doesn't it?
I think that there's a little difference between emotion and feelings. Emotion can be a lot of secretions that can get in the way. Like if there's an emergency, you don't want an emotional person there. You want someone clear, a little bit removed, who can really execute and get the problem solved, who can call 911, have someone boil water, and, you know, really address the problem. But with feelings, there is an intelligence and fine feelings. And that is really what you want to develop in the artist. The ultimate goal of the artist is intuition. It's that knowing that needs no validation. And everyone has had some feeling of it. When you say, well, I'm going to bring an umbrella today, but why? Why do I want to? It's sunny as it can be. And then at 2 o'clock it rains. There's an internal knowing that everyone possesses. And if it's not developed, it atrophies like anything. And so the ultimate goal of the artist, or I should say human being, is intuition.
But you're choreographing. So you have dancers, and I know you're very selective about who those dancers are, but they have maybe conflicting senses of intuition, don't they?
Absolutely, because it can be faulty and everyone is at a different level of development. But one of the first things that helps to build that, Michael, is to start, when you're an artist, the query, who am I? And when you begin to peel that onion past age, sex, race, identification with your job, what happens is you become more honest. You start to face yourself. You begin the act of introspection, which any serious human being on the planet has to do if you're going to discover yourself. And with that comes an honesty. Because you say, okay, am I performing to show off right now? Am I looking for the reward of applause or to impress somebody? Or am I really digging to find, not only to obey the law and get beyond it and to illuminate an idea, but am I really tapping into the uniqueness of my voice? And it takes that's a lot of introspection and a lot of self-work to get to that point where, after all the training and education, you finally get back to yourself and become an original.
Because you want authenticity. That's what you're after.
Absolutely.
But even the self can be in conflict with the self. I mean, there are protean and many selves, multiple selves, right?
You're hitting it on the head. I mean, that's our first relationship, the one with ourself. And we have two selves. You know, we have our weak, whining, complaining self, and we have our heroic self. And they're both kind of in battle. And because they each want to gain dominance over the mental kingdom. And so it's a struggle.
So as choreographer, your job is to guide people more into that realm.
Absolutely.
It's almost an archetypical realm.
Yes, it is.
A collective realm for your dancers, really.
It is a collective realm, and it's a position of bravery. It's really a heroic stance, because you not only have to be vulnerable, completely vulnerable, so that you're not hiding. And who does that? You know, when you're alone in a room by yourself, even when someone you love comes in, there's a slight accommodation. And so that place where the room is locked and you're really being who you are, to do that in front of thousands of people takes some bravery. But it also takes a depth in what you're doing, so that the world around you dims a little bit and you're so obsessed with what you're doing. So it's also about a level of concentration.
Talking with Alonzo King, who is artistic director of Lines, which is really a particularly a fusion of ballet and contemporary, but also that sense of authenticity you're talking about that comes into this is really in many ways almost improvisational, or one would suspect. I mean, you're guiding them. I was watching you during the rehearsals, and you're guiding them very fastidiously. But at the same time, the movements are spontaneous, aren't they?
The movement is incredibly specific, but they have to work it like it's the first time.
Yeah.
And I don't want it to look like choreography. I want it to be as if it's coming from them in the way that a good singer manipulates lyrics. So you're absolutely right that it should be their voice, and that comes from their understanding.
Talk about how this process worked for you personally, because, I mean, you've actually been doing yoga for about 30 years now.
That's true.
And you have this fascinating biography. Both your parents were professionals. They were both activists in the civil rights movement.
That's right.
And so you were brought up essentially, I suppose, what E. Franklin Fry Frazier would have called maybe black bourgeoisie or something.
That's my father fought that, but his... he had a deep compassion for humanity, and that was exposed through his life in action. It was not just words. The same with my mother. They taught me about compassion, and I'm nowhere on their level. You know, they were, for me, both intimidating in the way that what they believed in, they really lived. And so that became a standard for everything that I did.
And remains the standard.
To this day.
So they guide you in many ways? They are there, in a sense, providing a kind of leadership still in your life?
I think so. You know, my mother, we talk often. She has a website called Afrogenius, which is about genealogy. And my father, who passed away, you know, Michael, your first heroes are your parents. And when they look at you and they spend time with you and shower love on you, it's transforming. It's the best launching pad. And so it becomes a place to return to in the way that they behaved, the way that they treated you. And it's a lesson throughout the rest of your life that you keep referring to.
You also have, I believe, or had an uncle who, now we're celebrating the March on Washington anniversary, and a lot of talk about Martin Luther King. His daughter gave a speech recently where she compared what's going on Occupation Wall Street to the civil rights movement. And
yes.
Didn't your uncle represent King legally?
He sure was. He was a lawyer in Albany, Georgia, Dr. C.B. King, and he represented Martin Luther King. My father was very close with Malcolm X, and there's a legacy of letters between them at the Fisk Library. My father was also the president of the Albany movement when Martin Luther King came to Albany, Georgia. So we were always surrounded by that struggle, and my father was in jail a lot.
Well, this is quite a pedigree. Now, how did it go down in your family, so to speak, when you decided the dance was going to be your career?
You know, my father was very cool with it. Because he said to me also very early, as did my mother, you have to do what you want. And for me, whether it be dance, you know, architecture, politics, or farming, it's really the same kind of thing. We as human beings are makers and doers. And in making and doing, we want to have the highest quality of making and doing. And if in our making and doing, there's anything amiss or it's faulty, it's because of the lack of art. Even in politics, you know, if it's not decisions that are healthy and for the people, then it's a failing.
You've got a whole philosophy here. This, and a lot of it came from your parents, obviously. But the dance came more from your inner self, I presume.
I guess. You know, my parents were also art lovers. So there was a lot of music in the house. And I was exposed to art at an early age, always at the theater, always going to performances. My mother just made sure of it.
Visual art as well?
Visual art as well.
You mean like painting and sculpture?
Painting. I was exposed to everything.
Yeah. And then when did you know that dance was where you were headed?
Well, there came a period where, you know, I had an interest in many things, but there came a period I was living with my mother in Santa Barbara and high school was coming to a close and I was, you know, training in dance, had a lot of opportunities in terms of universities with full scholarships. And I said, okay, I've got to make a decision about what I'm going to commit my life to. And I had to really think what will fascinate me for the rest of my life? What can I marry that I won't cheat on or grow bored with? And I chose dance. It just seemed fathomless for me. And it was the thing that brought me the most joy.
There are a lot of what I would describe as broadly African dance motifs in your work. Where does that come from?
I think because I'm African.
No. It's cellular.
I think that that, you know, when you're a choreographer, you really are excavating. You're manipulating that body with as many possibilities as you can, what it can do, where you can take it. And so what happens is people look and they say, oh, my God, that looks Laotian. This looks that. This looks that. But it's really you are just exploring every possibility in terms of shape, design, rhythm that you can. And so because we share this body, there are familiarities and there are things that people align with and recognize as, oh, that seems like.
Talking with Alonzo King, clearly dance has been your passion and dance has been, you know, something that you have made an amazing contribution to. And yet art, you continue to say, is really primary. I mean, as an influence and remains a primary influence. You keep up with the arts?
Of course.
Yeah.
I think.
I mean, all of the arts.
Oh, all of the arts. Yeah. It's there's a quote that inspires me and that I live by. And it's Emerson when he says that the aim of art is higher than art. And Aristotle says that the role of art is for the good of man. And so these people who are in an art practice are actually involved in self-reform and they're changing their lives and becoming finer thinking and feeling people because of the art practice.
Not only the dancers, but again, the audience.
Anyone who's in art. And that's one of the laments of most artists now is that we've been separated from society into these kind of effete, isolated egotists and taken away from the rigorous masculinity. And I don't mean that in, you know, I don't want any women mad at me, but I mean that in terms of commitment and vigor in what we call ordinary life. And so everybody who is authentic is some kind of artist, no matter what they're doing. But that's not the prevalent view right now. But that is the traditional view when you look at the ancients, that everything should have symbol and meaning and be useful and be beautiful, whatever your vocation is.
It's always been extraordinary to me how many people call themselves artists. But, you know, in a sense, you're saying there is in just living an art.
Absolutely. And that is what Emerson is referring to by that quote, is that the goal of art is higher than art, that the end of your life, from having given yourself to something fully, you become a masterpiece of humanity. That's the point. That's why we have the Gandhis, that, you know, the people who have transformed their life. And it isn't, it's an art making. I mean, if we think of art as a knowledge, you know, instead of a design, but we think of it as a knowledge that is inside human beings, then we see its real purpose.
You're talking about masculinity and, you know, one does get a sense of that kind of intensity and virility in your work. And there's also a feeling of homoeroticism, which I think is pretty clearly something you want to communicate to.
I think that with the human being, we often think that we're one or the other when the failing, when men say, you know, I just don't get women. It's because they haven't identified the woman in them. And the same for the woman. I just don't get men. They haven't identified the man in them. We have both. We have Adam and Eve inside of us, meaning we have feeling and logic. Everyone has that to some degree, regardless of the sexes. One is uppermost in everybody. Either it's predominantly logic or it's predominantly feeling. With logic, if it's imbalanced, we're dry, calculated, predictable. If feeling is imbalanced, we are illegible, emotional, chaotic. And so both of those, logic and feeling, are again in a balancing act all the time. And when you see that beautiful balancing act, which sometimes you'll see in older people, you'll see an older man who is softened, who was hard before. And sometimes you'll see a woman who takes on manlike or a harder quality, because there's a closer balance.
It's kind of a yin yang, really.
Exactly.
You're talking about.
That's exactly what it is.
It's coordinated in your work, too. I mean, I can see the balance and the striving almost and aspiring for that balance. I suspect a lot of this in terms of you as a choreographer goes to yoga practice, doesn't it?
I think so. It's the idea that we are beyond form and we are beyond sex. And so there's a saying, Yogananda used to talk about when you are asleep, when you're fast asleep, I mean conked out, unconscious, when you wake up, you realize whether you slept well or not. So that means that there was something that was always there, and that is our witness or the awareness or the observer who is with everybody. And artists talk about all about
that, your unconscious, maybe?
Exactly. That's always observing. And so when we really talk about who we are, as we started this conversation, that dance is thought made visible and music is thought made audible, we are consciousness.
Talking again with Alonzo King. I was also looking at just the number of ballets that you've worked with. I mean, the Swedish Ballet, the Joffrey Ballet, the Frankfurt, the Hong Kong, and so it goes, Alvin Ailey. I mean, it's just such a wealth of experience, and one has to ask the question, is there a high point? Is there something that particularly rises above in terms of all these ballet companies? I mean, it's great to have your own company, of course, that above all, I'm sure, but just looking back at your experience retrospectively.
I think for me, the high point is connecting with people. When you go to a different company, often in that company, the artists are looked at as one, in one way. So they've been pegged and they're only given specific roles because they've been typecast, so to speak.
They each have their own culture, don't they?
They do, because each company is the belief system of whoever the artistic director is. And so when you come in, you're not only looking for artistic sympathy, but people are hungry to be seen a different way, to be used a different way. And then there's the contrary, Michael, where there are people who may be the stars of a company who are not interested in exploring any new territory because they found success in a certain way and don't want it tampered with.
These are the divas and the egos. And, and there are many of them in your world, as there are in any artistic world, right? Are you looking, when you're looking for dancers, what are you looking for? Are you looking for someone who you feel you can shape to this philosophy that you have? Or are you looking for someone in terms of their nature of being agile, their body type? What's paramount?
Well, the first thing I'm looking for is someone who really has it together so I don't have to shape them and I have less work to do. But what I'm really attracted to is someone, first of all, who has the technique under their belt so it's second nature and they don't have to worry about it. But beyond that, I'm looking for someone who is thinking, what are they going to bring to this art? That they've thought that I want to bring something unique to it. I'm looking for someone who's not a clone or a knockoff. I'm looking for a person who exemplifies all of the things that I admire in human beings. Someone who's brave, someone who's selfless, someone who has humility, someone who has the capacity to be lost in a role and not self-conscious. And so what it reduces to, Michael, is character. I'm looking for character.
You're also, it seems like, maybe looking for diversity because you have such a range of, it's a multiracial dance company.
That's important to me. That's important to me, that the dancers on stage represent the world.
The feeling being one of authentic universality or international qualities that you're after?
That's true. Yeah. People want to identify. And so when I look at media, when I look at advertising, when I painfully sometimes look at a television when I'm in a hotel on tour. I don't see that representation. And when I travel in the world, I certainly see it. So I think it should exist.
You also have what I suppose I could characterize as a kind of spiritual orientation. Where does that fit in?
I think from practicality.
Some see those as antithetical, practical and spiritual, but you don't?
I don't at all.
No, they're interwoven.
Yeah.
So you're looking for that as well, some sense of a higher, more transcendent seeking in your dancers?
I think that if you don't recognize anything larger than you in your life, what's the point of living?
Is there a separation, for example, when you're choreographing and when you're working with your dancers, that's as much life to you as the life you're living when you're not choreographing your dancers?
Absolutely. They can't be two different things, because just like we are speaking now, people are listening to who we are. That can't be separate. And when you're watching someone dance, you're watching who they are. And any attempt to hide that by wizardry or mask, that's a falseness. And so truth is, you know, that's the bottom line for everything.
But there are artists, of course, who use masks. I mean, in so many traditions culturally and whatnot. And certainly actors, of course, become something other than what they are authentically, although many actors will tell you, you know, I have to be authentic or else I can't do the role. But at the same time, they have to take on this role.
I think the distinction is that you want to be true to a role and you want to bring it to life. But you also, there's something that is unique about you that is unlike anyone else who exists. And that in India is called rasa, or that is your fragrance. And that too must come through. Or what is the point of you doing it?
Even if it's sometimes a little malodorous and repellent of a fragrance?
Yes.
because that's also that's part also, of the world of art, isn't it?
That's yes. Right.
There's a lot of you know, people have described some of the dancers that you work with as shuddering and undulating. And, I mean, a lot of that movement that, again, would seem so spontaneous.
Mm-hmm.
And yet it's choreographed.
Yeah. What happens with the dancer is it's like an actor if you're given a line. You don't want to become a hack and just repeat it the same way all the time. And if you're in a role for a long period of time, you're in a relationship and you want to make it new. You want to keep it alive and your understanding changes. And so your delivery of the line changes because you change as a human being. And the term spontaneity is really important because you tour a lot, you perform a lot, and you want to make it new. And one of the secrets in that technique of making something new is to find gratitude. And things change when you have that attitude, so that every night when the dancers are performing, it's different.
It's of course what actors say too. It can be the same role, the same lines, but it's different every night. Of course, the audience is different as well. When you're choreographing, tell us a little bit about your consciousness process. What goes on?
When you listen to music, what I'm interested in is music that allows me to have a dialogue. So that there's a conversation, that the dancer sometimes wants to ride the music like a surfer and just go for the ride where they're in it. I mean, no, where they're on it.
On it, yeah.
And then they want to get in it or become the lead instrument so that they're the lead musical instrument and then the music becomes the orchestra. And so we take turns with that, so that sometimes we're allowing the music to move us and then other times we're whipping or leading the music. So it really is a conversation and a dialogue.
How important is body type for dancers?
It's very tricky, Michael. That's a tricky question or a lethal question.
Lethal.
Because in dance, there's two things. The power of someone's art, for me, obliterates any body type. If you're potent in your art, I could care less, because that is what I'm interested in. And so what we're talking about is the way people are trained today, and they're poorly, poorly trained. Mm-hmm. And so the obsession has been with the idolatry of the physical form. And so you have young kids who are brilliant being brought into law, and their whole concentration is being on the approximation of this physical ideal and judged on how close or how far they are away from it. That's just a part of the profession.
That's our culture, too. I mean, how could you, for example, there was a whole flap about a woman who was obese leading exercises, doing Pilates or something like that, and they said, how can someone, you know, and there was a lawsuit over this. I mean, theoretically, I suppose you could have a dancer who is, remember those endomorphs and mesomorphs, those Dr. Sidney types? I mean, you could have somebody who is not agile, but it would look very strange, wouldn't it?
There's, you know, again, it depends on who the director is. For me, the bottom line is if you are fat in your art, I want you. I want to work with you. But there is also the idea that the physical form sends messages because of proportions, particularly on stages and the kinds of work that you do. But the idea that that a body type precludes from someone doing forms of dance, I don't believe that. Also, the dance world is so huge. I mean, when you think of Auntie Edith, these Hawaiian masters, you know, they're big. When you think of flamenco dancers, as they get a lot older than most contemporary dancers in the States, who are rich and, you know, just have regular everyday bodies, but their bodies is not the point. And that's what I really want to get to, is that the body really, no matter what kind of body you have, is an interference. Because what the dancer is talking about is really spirit. And so that communication is the real thing. And that is what's not being addressed in training. And so the whole thing has been body type because the look is more important than the content.
And there's a kind of lament in this, I think, on your part. You're just not getting people who are trained enough.
Right? Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. It's really sad. Not trained in ideas, just imitation of forms that they don't even understand the meanings in. You see it all the time.
Help some people, for example, who are maybe more neophyte when it comes to dance. What should they be looking for in that way of truth that you keep coming back to?
You know, I'm one of those people who if I went to a museum, I would not want a docent. I want to just have the work talk to me. And that's my position, is that people should come in and just watch dance. It's like horses. You watch horses for a long time, and then you know about them. You know what the gestures mean. You know what inflection. You watch every little thing they do because you've been around them.
And you have your thoroughbreds, and the metaphor works.
Yeah,
in many ways.
You've been around them so much that you understand their language. And so it's the same with dance. If you come to dance often, you begin to recognize not just forms, but what is actually being said, learning what's being communicated in symbol and form. Because there's many people who can know the pedagogy and understand the mechanics of language, but they don't understand what's being said.
Choreographer Alonzo King. And you've been listening to a special holiday edition of Forum featuring interviews from our archives. Forum is produced by Dan Zoll, Judy Campbell, and Kevin Guillory, and I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation in honor of Louise and Claude Rosenberg.